The Tights and Fights podcast, for over 6 years, a revolutionary force in sports and entertainment.
Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm the people's Halbo, Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation. You dance, see me, Danielle Radford.
Oh, hi, hello. Ooh, you really put some stank on that one. I like it.
That's right. And our buddy from fellow Max Fun podcast, Eurovangelists, it's Big Meatry Men Bumpin' Meat. Dimitri Pompei, welcome back.
That was really good. Thank you so much. Playing the role of Lindsay Kelk tonight.
Yeah.
I think I've practiced all the key lines. Bitch loves a kendo stick.
Yep.
I'm a Kevin Owens girly. what's the other one that I always forget? Oh, gosh. She has so many good ones. She has so many good lines.
She does. She's the most catchphrase ready of all of us.
Bitch loves a catchphrase.
Yeah. Why do we not have... We should have a t-shirt that just says bitch loves a t-shirt, but like the, you know, like it's got the cartoon symbols, like the,
yeah,
like the ampersand and stuff in the way. Julian, I hope you're listening to this. This is a gold mine that Dimitri's just bestowed upon us.
I cashed our first check already.
huge money. Speaking of huge money, did you know that if you take the 30 events prior to WrestleMania XL and then the next 30 events, 1 billion people were in attendance this weekend?
Look, if you're laying judgment on the suspect math that was happening during the attendance count, I don't want to hear it, sir. I don't want to hear it. You know, you can count everyone twice if you want to, because look, we all know it's all inflated. Let them make up as many people as they want.
That lady's pregnant. Let's assume it's twins, 3 people.
Look, I mean, if you see how much, like, I am now paying for a Hot Pocket, I guess that also, like, WWE gets to lie about their numbers if inflation's going to go up that high.
The Hot Pocket Index. I don't want to get too inside baseball here, but prior to us, the red light going on for record, Dimitri, you say you want to be positive. Like, you want to come in and put a positive spin on it. So I'm going to start you off with what may be a softball, but I want your honest opinion as well. I don't think this is going to be negative if you have a different answer.
I'm a man who plays it straight. I come from the great region of New England. We're all aboard the Straight Talk Express up there.
Fantastic.
No lies.
I love it. Well, then let me ask you, this WrestleMania, just as a whole, obviously it's not going to be perfect all the way through. We'll talk about stuff we liked and stuff we thought could have been better. Where would you rank this WrestleMania? Now that we've had 40 of them, is this top 5? Is this number 1? Where does it sit for you all time?
I would say it's among the better ones for sure.
Yeah.
I would say that it was produced exceptionally well.
Yeah.
My issue with it is that, and this is just me speaking for myself, a lot of the issues I'm having with what we're now, I believe we're calling the Renaissance era, is that WWE has been very good at getting people like me, who may have been lapsed or jaded or a little bit, to pay attention again. There's good setup for things. There's good setup for matches. And then when I watch the matches, sometimes they don't deliver. The in-ring quality does not match the level of storytelling that came before. And we'll talk about that more specifically about one match in particular starring 2 twins that I think we all agree about.
Yep.
But the storytelling was very good. The in-match quality, the in-ring quality for me, it was fine for most matches and very good for a couple. But overall, I put it in the top 10.
Top 10.
I would say. Yeah,
okay,
that's fair.
What about you, Danielle?
Look, I hate ranking. Just like, I'm just not like it's a bad thing. I hate it because like I will overthink ranking and then I'll go back and be like, well, we got to change that. So that's why I never do rankings, and that's why I get like 2 into my head. But I'm going to say it's at least 2nd because the 19 is the best one because that's...
For you. Let me ask you a different question then. Of all the things you hate, where does ranking sit?
Oh, I hate you so much. It is last. Or it is first. That is the one time I can actually say that ranking is first.
Fair enough. See, you're great at it. Yeah, the measuring stick for me is X7. I think that like just top to bottom is like a tightly produced card. All the matches are good, and the ones that need to be shorter are shorter. And it's got a great main event, like an iconic main event. I think this one is better. I think the production quality was fantastic on it. I think the high of the entire night, which we'll talk about in a little bit, might be the highest high that I've experienced in all 40 of the WrestleManias. I've watched them all. I watched a lot of them as they were airing.
That's how we know you're white. Because was that for the rest of us.
Oh, my goodness. I sat there. I was just a little Jewish jar of mayonnaise watching every WrestleMania, soaking it up. Bring on the Hellmans. Bring on the best.
Here's the thing. I'm also incredibly excited because I feel like I'm going to get to see like pure emotions mark out Hal later. And so I'm ready to feel feelings.
Let's feel some wrestling fucking feelings.
Let's get the Usos out of the way then. Because I think we can agree that, again, like there were great storytelling moments in it. The apology leading into the attempted attack is really smart. That felt earned just based on what was going on between the two of them. But it lacked, and a lot of matches had this. I don't think it was just the main event of night two. There was a lot of like, if you have been watching for a while, you are being rewarded for everything you've seen. Because they're working little pieces of it in there, and you can see the DNA of that all over the match. This didn't have that as much, and the pacing felt really like one of the things I don't care for about the Young Bucks is the fact that they super kick 8 million times.
Yes, you are that is famous.
And as someone who is avowed a WWE fan over AEW, it would be hypocritical for me to say, but when the Usos did it, it meant something. It absolutely did not. It looked like they forgot what they were supposed to do. So they were like, let's just kick each other. And I know it's like the I punch you, you punch me, and they're doing that kind of thing. But it's like, is that the part of the match we're in right now? It was really jarring. And what was wrong?
I like the emotions of it. I feel like the other thing was, if you're going to do a super kick party, it has to be a really, like the match has to feel like you can't blink or you miss something. It has to be really quick. So when you're doing a super kick party and it's not really quick, and everything feels a little bit slow, I think that was what is the pacing, because I do feel like there are some moves where it's like, you know, kind of the reason that we pop is because it's like bam, 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 bam. But if you're sitting there, set up a kick, sitting there, set up a kick, set up, like we want it to be a little bit wild and crazy. I would say the biggest heel out of the entire WrestleMania 40 weekend was the weather. You could not go more than 2 fucking seconds without somebody talking about how cold it was. And it was reported beforehand that they had flown in like a special heated ring. And I remember all of us were kind of like laughing about it, like special heated ring. And then a bunch of people went to WrestleMania and went, oh yeah, special heated ring. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, totally buy it. We'll never, like, yes, we get it. Because apparently it was super cold. And so part of me is also, for a lot of especially these night one matches, I am giving a little bit of like, they were also really cold, guys. So I'm probably going to lay a little of that. And also, like, I was on set. You sound like a douche when you say it like that. But anyway, I was working on Saturday. And so I wasn't able to watch it live. So I watched it later, having already unfortunately seen all of the impressions, because it's WrestleMania. It's like trying to avoid spoilers for the Super Bowl. Like, what are you doing? So I'm also kind of going into it with a little bit of like, I was able to kind of analyze as I was watching and make excuses as they came up. Yay me!
Hey, you know, I was watching live, and if we're going back to the Usos, and this generally holds for night one, in my opinion, except for, again, a couple of matches we'll discuss later. These are two great wrestlers. We have seen Jimmy and Jay do incredible things over the years, both individually, but mostly as a unit. So when they're working together in a match, you expect a lot. And not only are you expecting a lot, you also expect more, because this is the greatest wrestling show of the year. This is top billing. The expectation is higher. And I do find it fair to give extra criticism when, given the level of performance these guys can do, given the occasion, and given the years, frankly, of storytelling that led to this moment, it's absolutely fair to say that you were let down by the end result, because they never really quite kicked it into that second gear that makes a great ending to a story.
There's a very good reason why they hadn't done any matches with, it was the them against each other, like leading into this WrestleMania, right? This is like, this is the dream match. Like they had been wanting it forever, them, WrestleMania. And so we haven't really seen the two of them like wrestle, right? I don't, they haven't had any matches before that. This was their first match ever together, correct? And so I do think, I understand that like you want to get that moment of their first match together ever at WrestleMania, but the benefit of being able to run matches in front of crowds at house shows, which is the way that they kind of do it, so folks get used to the chemistry of like going against each other, they can kind of pick out spots, stuff like that, is that you get to work through a lot of that stuff with like audience eyes and a bunch of different people's eyes, and you get to like run it and like really see how that would work. I wonder how much they were able to, I mean, yeah, you, obviously they're going to have people watching it and they're going to have like everybody that works there is going to have eyes on it. But I wonder if it would have really benefited them to be able to run that in front of like a house full of people and be able to really tweak it and see like, okay, like that's not going to work. That's not going to work. I just never think it's a good idea for your first performance in front of people, like to not have a dress first. I came from theater. Like you want to have a dress. And I just feel like they probably didn't get that. And those are the things that help you iron like those problems out.
I want to talk about Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi defeating Damage Control. I love that all six of those women had a spot on the card. I think they looked good. The part that makes me sad is that this was the Too Cool in China versus like X-Pac and the Radicals. Like it was, these people are also on the card. And I would have loved for
that to have been developed in any meaningful way, like instead of just throwing them together so that they all get paid that day.
It's Jade. Yeah, it's Jade Cargill's first WrestleMania. And it's a six woman tag match where she looked, I thought she looked good in the stuff that she did. But honestly, like if she wasn't ready, bring her out on Monday. You could have brought her out on Monday and got a big reaction. You could have had it be handicap tag match, or you could have brought somebody else in that spot. I'm glad she worked. I think she looked good. They all look good. They all should be working. There's no way Bianca's going to lose, but it sucks that that match had so little investment. There's no reason for Jade to be, like, we had no idea what Jade's motivation was being there, other than I think Damage Control interrupted a meeting that she was having with Nick Aldis once. I think, and it might not have even been them.
Well, I don't, I just, three women's matches in two nights, you gotta fucking do better, that's fucking trash. And so this is obviously them being like, well, hey, but, you know, it's like 10 women. We got like 10 women on the WrestleMania card, and it's like, come on. You know, this is like the, we'll just throw everybody together again and like try to get people paid. Everybody in that ring is a fucking monster. Jade is still new and learning, but it's not like she is going in and she knows nothing. And I think that not having a good and proper build to that to like make us care does everyone in that ring a disservice. And as much as I prefer matches with two dudes, I have never preferred the idea of a two dude or dudette match more than that one. Oh, so many different combinations of two dudes you could have put in a ring instead of doing the 3x3. Now, was it really fucking dope to watch the AKA squad and their friend Naomi come in and like do their shit and look dope and look amazing? Yes. Would I have just rather have had, even if you spun it off into a tag and then another singles match, that would have been great. But the three man is just, it was fine. I mean, again, I had a great time. It's WrestleMania. You get into the high of it, but it wasn't like the best WrestleMania match of all time. I'm glad everybody got paid. I would have preferred if they would have like not given us the fucking second place conciliation match. Like, hey, there you go. And we are eventually, we're going to see how everything like shakes out now that we are off the road and we're heading towards other things. Eventually, we're going to have a talk about why every faction now is race-based. We're going to have a talk. Everybody except Judgment Day, we're going to have not yet, because I want to see what everything's going to look like. I'm going to give it like a month or so, but eventually we're going to have that conversation, because I love factions and I'm really excited that they're putting together factions, but I'm starting to see a fucking pattern.
It's 1997, Danielle.
are you saying you don't want to join my Black People on Podcast faction? Because we're getting started. We're really excited about it. It's gonna be really fun.
BIPOP. Like, no, we're not. No. Yeah. So again, so we'll see. And that was the other. And I'm like, again, I love seeing it and it's super dope. And but it's just, you know, that's my thought about that match.
We're pretty much in line when it comes to that match. My extra grievance with it is that every time I heard the Bayley promo in which she's talking about how Damage Control took over WWE, I had to laugh because this match was just another in the long series of patterns of Damage Control loses to Bianca.
She be whooping them girls
like,
up.
Their job is to
lose
to
She be whooping them girls up.
Exactly. And like, yes, everyone did look good at the spots they had, but this was very one-sided. Yeah. Like, it did not feel like Damage Control ever really stood a chance. Mm-mm. And again, I understand that this was meant to make Jade look good, and that's absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But you, a hero, or let's say a face, looks better when they face credible opposition. And we know Damage Control can go. We know each and every one of the people on Damage Control is an absolutely amazing singles wrestler. They should be able to show that in a competitive match that Jade can still win, because that makes everyone look even better. And it was frustrating to see just how one-sided.
Yeah, I think that you can lift up, I guess I'll call them AKAN for this pod. I guess you can lift them up without having to like do damage to Damage Control. Because at the end of this, mm-hmm. we still want to see them look like powerful. You know what I mean? I don't want to see Damage Control turn into like one of those coward heel squads, because that was never, that's not their deal. Their deal is that they will kick your ass. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. Let's make sure they still look like they can do that.
Yes. Agreed.
Now the Philly guy in me loved the Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson appearance in what I'm calling Mysterio versus Mysterio at all part two. Because really that's what it is. Like there was no like brawl at ringside with everybody that I can remember, but in comes maybe the most iconic Philadelphia Eagle of all time, along with his Super Bowl champion compatriot, both of whom you can listen to at a Philly Special Christmas. Both albums benefit charity. Check it out. I own the gold version. You should get one too. That match was fine. I'm always happy to see Dominic work. Like, he was the one I was most excited to see. The rest of those guys are all fantastic. I know it's going to be fun. I know they all know what to do. The fact that Dominic can be in that match and not seem lost a little bit, even at all, is just incredible. Like, that kid he's just so good. He keeps getting, every week he's better.
Can I share my one issue with this match?
Please.
I also had a lot of fun with it. Rey Mysterio was not allowed to give Dominic a spanking again. He set up for it, and they denied him the chance. And that shit was so funny last year, and I was waiting to see it again, and they stole it from me. I hated it.
You'll get it again. You'll get it again. They don't want to give you too much of a good thing. But yeah, I do. Like, once you set it up, I'm like, it's Chekhov spanking, right? Someone has to get spanked. If it's not going to be him, then, you know. Jason Kelsey, you know what you did. Get Jason over daddy's Kelsey. Knee.
You think Kylie would allow that? You don't want her getting in that ring. Everybody will get cleared out.
Oh, no. She would whip that ass. She'd be that ass.
And you know what? I'd love to see that. That would make the match even better.
I know I've said how against Sami Zayn, how wrong I think it is that he's the guy in that match, because he had absolutely no backstory. There's no underdogs. He acts like he's been embarrassed when he won the main event of night one of WrestleMania last year and a title. He's held this is now his third go around with the IC title. He's not an underdog. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I like that story, that ship sailed March of last year when he and Kevin Owens won. Like, that was the end of that. That's such an easy story to heat up. He plays that role extremely well. He took the spot that should have been Chad Gable's. And now it feels like Gable's going to turn heel on him to win the belt. And it's just, like, I hate feeling cheated out of what would have been the actual underdog moment of the guy who has never won a singles title, who was cheated out of it in the fall and not given a rematch and had to fight to get it, and him winning that gauntlet match would have been the right call In fact, you should have. He should have been the one who started.
Yep.
And have him and Sammy finish, and then have Sammy is the heel taking it off of him. Even the next night, and then him having to chase Sammy is a better story than what they gave us. There's a lot of like, we didn't have Brock, so this is last minute. But I also have immense trust in them as storytellers because of the numerous areas where they more than made up for it. And I believe they can tell a good long-term story because they've proven they have the ability to do that. But man, was that – what a letdown, because it was such a huge deal that nobody has held that title longer. People have – like Bruno – nobody's ever going to top Bruno Sammartino with the World Championship. No, I don't know if anybody can ever top Gunther having a 2-year run almost.
My hope is like they took it off him because he's going to start going for one of the biggie belts because it is that time. Like he is him. He is that dude. It is time for him to start mixing it up with the folks at the top of the card. And in fact, I would hazard to say that if it wouldn't have been for some very, the last couple of years have had some very big acquisitions. Had that not happened, he probably would have already been top of the card. If you don't get Cody coming back, if you don't get Punk coming back, he probably would have already been there. Cause like, it looked like him and Drew were the people who were next to get set up to be up there. So that's what I'm hoping is happening with this. But it was a good match. I love the, the Brain Buster, the top rope Brain Buster. It was great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was so good. What a great moment. I understand your thoughts on this one, Hal, and I do agree with most of them, because if you look at what Sammy gets out of this match, like how much he gets pushed, and then you think of how much more Chad Gable would have gotten from beating Gunther in this match, it is criminal. That said, I loved the match. It was my favorite match of night one, and it was my second favorite match of the entire WrestleMania. Ooh. Because in ring, couldn't be beat, except by one. It was Sammy's got great chemistry with Gunther. Maybe just Gunther has good chemistry.
I think
with
both
everyone,
of them do. I think that's really
so does Sammy. Yeah, yeah.
When you the downfall of the ring general. You know, it was going to be an amazing moment regardless of who it was. And if it couldn't be Gable, I mean, I don't know if Sammy would have been my second pick. He would have been my top five picks for sure. But the match was so good. Like, I want to be upset that wasn't Gable, but God damn, that match was good. So I don't know what to say.
I saw a bunch of GIFs of people posting like that top rope Brainbuster and being like, hey, just so y'all know, I'm not taking that off just anybody. So just like, so you know, like wrestlers were tweeting that, like, just so you know, don't come at me thinking that I'm taking that from you. There are like two people I will take that move from.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of trust there.
You got to be really, really talented for me to be like, yeah, I'm going to jump off this rope and not land on my head or my neck. Thank you. No. You got to be real good.
So that was your favorite match of night one. My favorite match of night one. I don't think it ever got better than Becky and Rhea Ripley. I think that match was so good. It actually benefited from going first. And I think every other match was hurt by having to follow it because nobody was able to hit all the notes and the pacing that they were able to hit.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about you want to, like, when you're putting together a show, whether it's improv or, you know, stand-up or, I don't know, fucking poetry. I don't know what else people do on stage. But whatever it is, you want to make sure that you're making, like, a little sandwich. And that's why, like, the best thing that everyone comes to see, you save to the end so people don't leave and you don't burn everyone else out. But you want to put, like, the thing you know is going to be, like, second best. You want to put that up first because that's what's going to make people stick around and people aren't going to get bored and checked out first thing. And that's what they did. Or at least in terms of like, this isn't a skill issue. This is more of a like, The Rock is going last. We're not going to put The Rock up second. All right. But yeah, so that's why that goes up there. But that was Rhea Ripley continues to be a fucking phenom. I feel like we all a lot of times give a lot of grace to folks because we'll be like, hey, like, you know, some folks are learning and like you kind of meet people where they are sometimes when it comes to these. And then you see a match where it's people who are not yet fully formed, but like either at peak or like two hairs away or from being at their peak. You're like, all right, this is what that looks like. This is what it looks like when you have two people who are top of the fucking game, like in a ring together. Like there's no, they're just going to go and they're going to beat everyone's ass and do exactly what. And again, you know, that's, this is a match that could have easily headlined. And if it wasn't for the fact that they had, you know, The Rock, it may have, you know.
And that's how Becky wrestles sick. If you could wrestle like that sick in many other places, that makes you a multi-year world champion.
Yeah.
That's the work she does is just incredible.
That was her flu game.
Yes. flu game.
What a great comparison. Yeah.
Except it was the actual flu and not rumored to be a hangover.
Yeah, really. It was so good. Overall, though, night one was kind of like, I left it feeling like, oh, this is not going to be. I was concerned for Triple H. I was like, the crowd enjoyed it. It was good. People, there are enough handles for people to grab onto, and like the ladder match was good. It had everything that you'd kind of want in it, including like a comedy spot from R-Truth. I think it was the right people to split those belts. I like the awesome Truth winning their titles finally, and I also think that A-Town Down Under, really good chicken shit heel champions. That you have a ton of people who can chase them, especially once we have the draft. The draft is only a couple weeks away at this point. So we're going to get a whole new title picture out of that. And I think those are good choices. So you have your babyface show and you have your heel show. And that gives you a good chance to sort of mix it all up.
The real winner of that match was DIY's gear, because it was so good. Oh, just fantastic. Doing a little D-Generation X for us out there, for all us old heads there. And it looked phenomenal.
Yeah, Gargano always has like amazing gear. Like every time that he's in like any kind of like paper live, but whatever. Anytime he's in a big match, he always comes with big, important, like good gear. Whoever makes his stuff is like, they know what they're doing.
I follow his gear guy on Instagram.
Oh.
And all of his designs are wonderful. Yeah? Yes.
Ooh, I'll have to look that up.
Let's talk about the tag match. First of all, The Rock's entrance was the best part of the whole thing. It was really, really good.
I was watching with my friend, hi Brian, and some other friends, and we sat down and we took bets on how long it would take to get all four of those guys in the ring. And the closest guess was 12 minutes, because I think it was just over 17 minutes to get all of them in the ring. But that said, The Rock's entrance was very cool.
That reminds me of like betting on like the only betting I'll ever do is I bet for how long the anthem is going to be before the Super Bowl. That's totally what that reminds me of, because it's one of those things where it's like you don't know who it's going to be, like if it's somebody just sitting there and singing whatever, but if Alicia Keys comes out with her piano, you know it's going to cross a certain mark. And then so for y'all it's, if you know if The Rock is going to be there, it's going to cross a certain amount. That's brilliant.
The entrance was longer than 1, 2, 3, 4 of the 7 matches of night one.
Yeah,
it sure was. but the right ending and really fun. The Rock threatening to fire the referee for counting him out was a really fun. It's a really fun like little piece of business.
That referee was MVP, the silent MVP of the match, because he's trying to play it by the rules and he's just getting railroaded by The Rock. The apology to Cody and Seth is just so like, good. I'm sorry, I'm trying. I'm trying to do my job. I hope that referee has a long career in marquee matches, because holy shit. Really good.
Slammy Award incoming.
I'm so happy that they're letting the refs have actual personality again. Because I guess like for a while the edict was that like, and it's like, you know, I think that there's a good difference between doing like little Nate shit and having it where like the referees are like the focus of like storylines.
Right.
You can still let them do things like that and that personality and not just be like a fucking home, like a what's the word I'm looking for? Like a carrier pigeon, where they're just like sending messages back and forth between people. They can actually do more. So that's always nice.
As a man who watches a lot of lucha and his fair amount of Japanese wrestling, I love me a good old fashioned heel ref who's always up to no good and sometimes gets caught with his pants down. But short of that, you know, I'm glad there is more personality. Yeah. You're right. I agree with that 100%.
Shout out to the original WWF bad guy ref, Dangerous Danny Davis. who had a match at WrestleMania 3. Come on, everybody. We remember. We remember.
Never forget.
Yeah. The British Bulldogs had to beat him up. They had to show him what for. So that was night one. And then I think night two.
Ooh.
Night two could almost stand on its own as a top five WrestleMania.
Yes. Easily the superior night.
If you took out the pride beating Final Testament in the Philly Street Fight, that was, I'm still not sure what I watched. I felt like I went into a fugue state, and then then everybody was doing their finish on Kevin, and then Kevin was getting beat up, and then Kevin lost. I was like, oh, we're not going to see him on the main roster for a while. And guess who showed up on NXT Tuesday night? The giant grown-up babies and Kevin.
Yeah. I wanted to enjoy that match a whole lot. I like that, like, Brie and Scarlett got into it and had a little bit of business. That was really fun. Mm-hmm. I like the kendo sticks because, you know, bitch does love a kendo stick. And I, you know, Bubba Ray was there and that was great. And I'm glad Legends contracts are good for everyone. He got paid. But it was... that many people, you got to have stuff happening, right? I felt bad, but Snoop Dogg, I will say, was the MVP of that match.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because Snoop was just like he had no filter. He was just saying whatever came to his brain. He's like narrating it like he's sitting at home and watching it with like his friends and forgetting that he's being broadcast live. It was great. He's like live tweeting WrestleMania, but verbally.
I can't decide if he was high or excited because
yes,
the stream, yes, the stream of consciousness that makes me think high, but how hyped he was for even the simplest things. The important thing is Snoop had a great time and therefore we all had a good time.
I know. And I also love that Michael Cole had to make sure that we knew that he knew what marijuana was. Thank you, Michael Cole. Legal in a bunch of states. You can smoke it legally in a lot of states. Thank you for letting us know.
Thanks, Uncle Mike.
Look, I'd rather have the Michael Cole drug schedule update than the Michael Cole meteorology updates.
That's fair. Enough. Oh, there were so many.
I got to be honest. I love Snoop Dogg. I love that he settled into like the aging G who just does whatever he wants and it's a good time. And I appreciate the patron he's been of wrestling. But my God, the only sports commentary I care about from him are his angry videos after the Lakers lose a game and he just tears the team apart. That is so hilarious. And there's like passion and clearly a true knowledge as opposed to like a suplex. Like I can't, let that be the pre-show. Have him come out and commentate on the pre-show and he can come out and say how many people were there. And that's great. Thank you, Snoop Dogg, for delivering the number. And for being the celebrity who shows up, that's awesome. But, I mean, really.
Look, Hal, let me put it to you this way. This is just your old pal Dimitri's opinion.
Please go ahead.
I have never, ever, ever, ever in my life enjoyed a second of Karrion Kross on my television. I do not care for him. He's dreadful as a performer.
Oh.
He's dreadful in every way. I do not like this man in any capacity whatsoever.
Sure.
Damn.
So you were there for Snoop Dogg.
Can someone put the Ether soundtrack underneath that?
I did not care what happened in this match. I turned to my friends like, as long as Karrion Kross loses, this works for me. And guess what, pal? He lost. Match of the night. Just kidding.
No, you said it. No take backsies.
No take backsies.
Yeah, sorry. That's 100% fair. Bayley won the women's title from Io, who I really like, but I think, and this is weird, now that I look back, now that both reigns are over, I definitely think, and maybe it may be booking. She and Seth Rollins had almost identical runs with their titles. No signature match, no signature feud until the end. Don't care. When she won it, it was like mildly okay. Like people who love her, which we do, were very happy to have her as champion. And we know how capable she is. We've seen her carry an entire division before in the company. But now Vince is gone. Vince has been gone for about 90 days, right? 90 days, mm-hmm. about fair.
Yeah.
Right before Royal Rumble is when he was gone. That's now correct. This is the Triple H era. I'm willing now, this WrestleMania also is really interesting because it's a culmination, but also a reset. I'm willing to see now, like, now what are you going to do? Now let's see what you do with it. Because you ran a company with a killer women's division. So now we're going to see you do it again twice. Because, you know, there's really no excuse not to have Tiffany Stratton on your show somewhere.
She should have been in there somewhere. I'm not going to call it the Triple H era. I'm sorry. I'm not naming things after a dude. I get it. In case we didn't know, old daddy's gone, new daddy is good. Okay, fine. Whatever. That's great. But I feel like just like really, because that's, and it's not for us for them to be constantly hammering that Triple H is in charge. This is like for them to like make a stamp on it, make sure all the investors know this is for people with the money and the people who handle ratings and anybody in business, for them to be like, hey, like we put our dick out on the table to let you know, like this is what's happening and how you know it is this is how we're communicating it. I get it. It wasn't for me. I could have done with a lot less of it. You know, like I am glad that they had that woman come out here and say fuck you to my dad in front of the whole world. That was great. Really great. Fantastic. Wonderful. Loved it for me. Anyway, so Io and Bayley was a match I was really worried it was going to wind up getting lost in the shuffle. And I'm very, very happy that this crowd stayed engaged, mm-hmm. that they were super into it. It was a really good match. Io looked great. Io looked like a star. Like, yep. Io looked fantastic. But it is one of those things where this, you got to go by, like, what is motivating this? And they have had this huge feud between the two of them. And you're right. Like, it doesn't wind up paying off until the end. And I wonder, because you have this on night two, you have the other match on night one, that winds up looking like, well, now like the leaders of the group are going to fight. And now it's like the Pips. The Pips had their match. Mm-hmm. But we also didn't like, the Pips match wasn't like great. Like it wasn't the you know, take all of Bayley's defenders and then you take all of Io's defenders and have them fight over them. And it's like, okay, but why are y'all having a proxy fight over these two women that we're going to see an actual fight from the next night? So I was really worried that it was going to take something out of that. I do think it was, I don't know. I really loved it. I thought that it was fantastic. I'm really happy for Bayley. I just wanted to see more women's matches. It would have been nice if we had one in addition, since this is the last one that we're going to get to talk about. Happy for Bayley, happy for Io. It wasn't the strongest match on the card, but it was also like I was really worried that it wasn't going to land. And it seemed like everybody like really woke up for it and was fully invested. And that's great. And also, like, I feel bad because she didn't get to have like Haley and Paramore come in and do her entrance. And I know that was kind of a disappointment.
I liked her entrance so much better, being carried in by a bunch of dudes.
I think it's what she deserves, really.
Yeah.
The only regret is I wasn't one of those guys. Yeah.
Right?
I
it could have been you.
Look, there's got to be a sign up sheet or something.
Yeah, just check Actors Access.
Yeah.
Craigslist.
You really can't take your eyes off of Io when she's doing moves. I mean, yeah. What an excellent performer. Mm-hmm. I think we're all in agreement. The lackluster reign is a troubling sign. And you're right. It is a new era that they keep trying to force us to accept. But there's a lot of old era hangovers. Mm-hmm. And the inability of this company to understand how to write fully rounded, three-dimensional Japanese women continues to be a problem.
It is.
And I'm willing to bet that it will get better. I need it to get better faster.
Yeah, let's go.
Sure.
Let's giddy the fuck up. Let's fucking go.
By the way, every prediction that I had for a title at WrestleMania came true, including Logan Paul retaining. Again, I know Danielle loves two dudes, but sometimes three dudes, and that was such a good three dudes match. And I think three dudes matches can be better than two dudes matches, and two dudes matches can be better than three dudes matches.
I think it depends.
It depends on the three people. It depends on the two people, right?
I agree. But also, this was really a match in which two people acted as one.
The bit of Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, Randy Orton having to jump Kevin Owens, like, are we doing this now? Are we going to do this now? And then he tries to give him the RKO, and they, I mean, so good.
I was seriously like the whole time I was like, this is going to be it. This is what's going to get Randy back on the fucking wall. Like, this is where he's going to break my heart. This is where he's going to fuck up. And it's like they knew that we were waiting for them to turn on each other. So I like when characters are smart enough to go like, hey, we can't do this right now. I know it's in both of our nature to do this thing, but that dude really fucking sucks. You just kind of suck. So let's get through that and then we can work on this. That was like perfect. I like when the heels use logic in the ring to be like, well, are they really heels in this match? Logan's really the only real heel. But I like when wrestlers use logic to go like, which is also great because then that saves that moment. So it had a bigger impact when that moment kind of happened later in the night.
You know what made this match work for me is that it was oddly similar to my favorite three-man in recent memory, Will Ospreay versus Jon Moxley versus Dave Finlay, in which Will Ospreay and Jon Moxley say, for the first 5 minutes, let's just beat the ever-loving shit out of Dave Finlay. And then after that, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
It was very similar in that regard, because even the ending was the same. They teamed up against him, they broke down and then attacked each other, and the guy who got the initial five-minute beating ended up tricking them both and winning it all. It followed a very similar pattern to that, and I loved that match so much, and it was very strange to see that same pattern making the same spots in my brain light up. Because these are three very different performers who are accomplishing the same goal. I did want the same level of fun with the prime spot that we got at last year's WrestleMania. I wanted a little more prime foolishness, but that's just me being nitpicky at this point, because it hit all the right spots for me.
Yeah, I'm wondering with the prime, because I was wondering why that didn't get more involved too. And I think it's because like as soon as you put the prime bottle out there, the first thing all of us go is like, oh, it's going to be KSI, or as I said last year in text, CSI. Please forgive grandma. I did. I was texting the Tights and Fights group chat and they were like, who do you think is in the bottle? And they were all naming off people. And I was like, I think it's CSI. Like, I think they own Prime together. And then it came on and I was like, all right, it's fine. Forgive my millennial brain.
Dick Wolf in there.
Yeah. But I think that that's why they held off on having the Prime bottle do too many spots, because then they already knew that we were waiting for it to happen. And so they wanted to be like, no, it's not KSI, it's this other shitty streamer dude or whatever.
Yeah, it was like just enough. It was just enough for me. I could see where you would do more of it, but it was like just enough. Brief spot, put him through the table, all fun. The cat popping off of it, like you can't time that better. Just that a great, like, made it a memorable moment, made it go viral. Like, it wasn't that some dude who I've never heard of and will never hear about again got put through a table. It was the cap popping off that I feel like everybody sort of got talking about, and the fact that people were talking about it made it successful and kind of wiped away all the F-bombs that were being dropped. But man, Logan Paul continues to, I'm not putting this over, but I do want to mention he had Triple H on Impulsive. I think it was between the two nights of WrestleMania.
Oh, so they must have pre-taped it, and then, or did they do a live one?
Logan Paul is so smart in terms of like understanding his, like, he basically said, like, I know my role is to help promote the company because I have this following by trying to create viral videos. And that's the value that I bring. Like, he gets that.
Yep.
And it's clear he gets everything else, but understanding the fact that he seems to come to it from a place of, I'm trying to learn from everybody, but I understand why I'm in this spot. So I'm going to do the best that I can to occupy that spot. Just like, what a gold mine. Had Stephen Amell, like, this could have been Stephen Amell, oddly, because he was decent in a SummerSlam match.
Because, that is one of the, it's the combined with the fact that, like, there's the surprise of, oh, Logan Paul's actually really good at this. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he recognizes, I am not a wrestler, so if I am here with this belt, that means that there is a wrestler who does not have this belt, so I better be doing my fucking job and promoting this company if I'm taking the spot from this wrestler. Is that something that Logan Paul or maybe someone else around him who's very smart at business thought or told him? Who cares? It's clear that that's what, because he's mentioned before, like, I know that I'm not, like, I'm taking a spot, so right. I'm not trying to say that, like, I don't know that man, so I'm not gonna be like, oh, he's changed, he's so different, but I am gonna say that, like, you know that part of it. And that is also what makes it so that when he's on our TV, we can go, I hate him and I hate that he's making me enjoy this match, instead of going, I hate him and I'm turning this off. Someone tell me when something else is on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's a part of everyone who's over the age of 35 who thinks back to that moment in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back at the end, where they find the troll, the internet troll, and they go to his house and they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
There's a part in every one of us who's of a certain age range who loves to see streamers get beat up. It's something we all enjoy because we don't like them. We don't understand. We do understand them to a degree, but it's just far away enough where it's like it feels foreign and it feels hostile to everything we know and love. And there's just a real satisfaction watching one get put through a table or eat an RKO.
Yeah.
And that's why Logan Paul's matches are always going to be pretty satisfying.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's willing to take the punishment. I think he understands that part of it, too. His job's to take punishment, and they've done a great job of building him. And when somebody beats him, it's going to mean something, and I don't think either of those guys were the right guy to do it. Because neither of them need that title. You know, the KO doesn't need the U.S. title. He's almost better without a belt unless he's wrestling in the main event, because he's so good at building story that you can stick somebody into a program with him and it will help that person out. So he can he absolutely has that role as well. Randy Orton, too, to a certain extent. Like, he's a main event guy. He doesn't need to be going after the U.S. title, but it made sense for him to be in that match. There was a logical line, and I get it, and I had less of a problem with that match. I didn't have the same problem with that I did with some of the other matches that felt thrown together, because there was a history with Kevin Owens, and then Randy Orton sort of inserted himself into that. Like, that I got, 100%.
No U.S. title run of Kevin Owens's will ever beat the time he was the face of America.
Yeah.
And his face was on the ramp, and he would walk around it because he would refuse to walk on his own
face.
He's
not walking on his own face. It's the face of America.
there's no way if he had won, he could have beaten that. So very wisely, they kept it on Logan for, right, someone else who's going to benefit and have a wild time with that title.
He is the Deadpool of WWE in that he understands and recognizes... He recognizes what's going on in a very breaking the fourth wall way that pretty much no other character does. Like contract signings to being in a triple threat, all of those things. He's always the one to call it out. And it fits his character really, really well. Every version of that, including I love the new face of America. I also loved his run just beating John Cena when he first when he first showed up on the roster as the NXT champion. It was pretty incredible.
Good time. Great time.
So Cody and Seth lose night one. They both take a beating. Seth's not ready for Drew McIntyre, who the two of them also have two of the longest entrances ever. He defeats Seth Rollins, and then, overcome by his hubris, goes and stands in Punk's face, rubs it in his face. I'm saying this for anybody who didn't watch it. I'm not telling the two of you. I know we all saw it. I'm just narrating here.
Tell me again, because it was, and I know this is controversial, it was my favorite part of night two.
Yeah, got up on the table like he was a fucking angry cat and is like slashing at
right
his,
in
face.
His face. Yeah, I want you to see this. Punk trips him, takes the arm brace off, clocks him with it, starts stomping him. Down comes Damian Priest to finally cash in his money in the bank. So Drew is the champion for all of, I think, 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes before he loses to Damian Priest. And maybe the best part of all, outside of it being really great storytelling, Seth loses because he flew too close to the sun. And then Drew loses because his pride won't let anything go. Mm-hmm. That sort of works in his character. Long term, when he came back to the main roster, he hadn't let anything. He had a grudge from the last time he was there, and he never let it go. He didn't get to win in front of a crowd, and he never let it go. He lost to Roman, and people kept moving ahead of the line. He never let it go. Punk is the final straw. Punk gets injured during Royal Rumble, and it turns into the best storyline run of his career. All he talks about is how he took Punk's place and it just becomes this weird vendetta that he has against Punk, and he pays the price. The best part of it was him tweeting during Seth's entrance, bored at work, LOL, and then after he lost the title, quote tweeting that with fuck.
You like so good. That, you know, like I said, this was my favorite part of Night 2. Yeah. And what makes it really work is, like, the story is so brilliantly logical, and it's appropriate that Drew is Scottish because this is wrestling Macbeth. You know, he was warned well in advance. Don't do this. You're going to borrow from what you just said. You're going to fly too close to the sun, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost you everything. Punk told him, don't do this, man. Don't do it. You're taking your eye off the ball. And that's what cost him. That there's just a moment. It's like a chord resolving. It just feels so good in the brain mm-hmm. when a story beat hits just like that. And that huge, like, oh, man, that moment where everything comes together in a satisfying conclusion, I couldn't have been happier. And I love Drew. I wanted him to be champion for a long time. Yeah. This is even better.
Yes.
Yeah, this is one of the best ways they could have played this. Damian Priest is also one of those people who was like, it's time for him to kind of like raise up and be higher in the ranks. He, yep. not, besides like just being a fucking awesome wrestler and all of the good work that the Judgment Day is doing and what it does for the Judgment Day, it's also like Damian Priest, you know, has been helping them. He's been helping train Dom. He's one of the reasons that Dom is in the shape that he's in now and is able to do things like impress Hal. He has been, he's been training like Bad Bunny and made sure that Bad Bunny was ready to go out and wrestle. Like, he's really been putting in that work. I think he's been working with some of the other like younger wrestlers and other newer people too. Like, they know they can give it. And so he's like, he's good. And it's like, yeah, you're being rewarded because you have been very fucking clutch backstage. Drew not only gets to win in front of a crowd, so he gets to have that experience of winning mm-hmm. in front of a crowd. He gets to do it at WrestleMania 40, which is, you know, it's a big round number and fucking A, we love those. Even when he winds up losing it, he still gets to have this really big moment, which is fantastic. And yes, having it be a character choice of like, dude, you could have just like left and you would have been fine.
You get a reset for Seth Rollins because you don't quite know what's going to be next for him. We know it was next for him that night. We're about to talk about that in like 30 seconds. But now Punk is costing Drew McIntyre a shot at Damian Priest championship and helping Jey Uso win the challenge on Monday night. So I'm excited to see that move forward. I'm also excited to see what kind of champion, at a certain point with a guy like Damian Priest, who has every tool, he's your five-tool baseball player. He seemingly can do it all. You got to see what you have with him. And now, what better time than now? What better way to give him momentum moving forward than to have him do his cash in at WrestleMania? Like, there's kind of no better way to give him that title. Mm-hmm. And now you have to see what kind of champion he's going to be. And it could be great. It could be horrible. You don't know, but I'm excited to find out.
You know what this reminds me of? Mm. It reminds me of when Seth cashed in.
It's very similar, isn't it?
Just that thing of like having him come in, like this is him going and moving up and being like in that level. And it felt like the crowning of someone. And then also like somebody who obviously does a lot of like is really well liked backstage.
Let's talk about a match that was 10 years in the making.
Hmm.
And here's why, for those of you who are listening. In 2014, after WrestleMania, they had another pay-per-view. I think it was, I forget what it was at that point. If it was Backlash. I think it might have been Backlash still.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been Backlash. The Shield defeated Batista and Triple H and Randy Orton clean in an elimination match. Clean swept them. And the next night we had There's Always a Plan B. Seth Rollins turns. He hits Dean Ambrose with the chair. The look of shock on Roman. No, Roman got hit first. Sorry. He hits Roman with the chair, and then he hits Dean Ambrose. But he turns on Roman, and for 10 years, Roman has never forgotten about it. That has lived in his head. When they feuded 2 years ago, that whole match, he lost. Roman lost by disqualification because he wouldn't let go of the chokehold, and he was sitting there screaming, he won't let me let go. He won't let me. There's a part of me that's gone that he took from me, and that has stayed. There's all through his reign, he's been so his like the most commanding presence with the most fragile ego played perfectly. Like, he is your next movie star 100% because the layers of performance that he's been able to work with for at least the last 4 years It all catches up to him, and it's still not over. He's still not over it, because the moment that he can seal his championship win, he cannot resist seeing Seth, seeing the chair, having the chair in his hands, and seeing Seth in the Shield gear. He finally gets to do what was done to him, hits Seth with the chair. Seth takes the exact same bump that Roman took 10 years ago. And because he lost focus for that split second, he lost everything. He cannot let go. He is a character that can't let go. He's haunted by his past, and his inability to move beyond it took him from a perch that he was never going to be knocked off of to losing the thing he cared the most about. How brilliant is that?
When I tell you, everyone knows that I like watch the wrestling. So I actually had a bunch of people ask me, like people who do not watch wrestling, have never watched wrestling, ask me a bunch of questions because like everybody's talking about wrestling now. And so they were like, I'm going to check in after WrestleMania and if I have any. And so they hadn't watched it, hadn't seen anything. And they were even telling me like, yeah, everyone I've talked to about it who likes wrestling keeps telling me about like this guy. And so I'm going in like this story of the fact that like you have this dude who's kingpin, you know, fucking king shit of Bitch Mountain. Like the fact that you have him at the top of the world and he sacrifices it because he sees this dude who broke his heart fucking 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. That resonates with people. Like me explaining that actually had a few people go like, I think I might, is this when I start watching wrestling? And I'm like, I promise you. Like, so again, that's some Shakespeare shit. It's super classic.
Right.
But the fact that they're able to get into those nuances now, having him come out with the gear, having, you know, Roman doing all of his off mic talk and all of his jibber jabber, which is always fantastic. You know, we talk about like long-term storytelling and all those other things. Like, this is, it's getting to a place where, it, you know, this is so much better than just if it would have just came out and they were like fighting, like having those moments when you're seeing the way they're framing like Roman's face, like the way that you're able to see the action is like conveying it both in a physical way and with the yapping. It just, it was really, really well done. And it does such a service for all of the characters who are in that ring. It doesn't take anything away from Cody, because you had to throw everything at Cody for him to even get to a point where he could be that vulnerable, where all it would have taken was for him to get down there. And then with Roman, it just, this is where you start to see the cracks and the things that he's carrying that is stopping him from achieving greatness. And there's obviously, you know, there's blowback from that. And then with Seth, like he gets this moment of kind of redemption. Like he's the one who created the beast, so he's got to be the one to slay it. Like that's huge.
Well, he said, I'll be your shield.
And he was always like the architect of the shield. Like he was always like the, you know, so he's got to be the one that like fixes the damage that he made. That's fucking beautiful. And then also they like get to kick and punch people on top of all that. How crazy.
I think you might have just sold it to me right there, Danielle, because ever since Sunday, I mean, knowing the history of the Shield and knowing the matches that Seth and Roman had since, it has been bugging me this whole time why Seth would allow someone else to dethrone Roman. Because, you know, the chemistry and the story between those two and the ego that we know Seth has as a character, it makes me admit that the whole night I watched is like, Why would? Because I tuned in a little late to a lot of the run up to WrestleMania. So like they're tagging, he's tagging with Cody. Why would he help him? He hates Roman. Why would he get in the middle of this when he should be, you know, the one?
Right.
But when you say it like that, okay, fine. I still would have preferred Seth for a number of reasons that I'm sure we're going to get. I know he didn't need it. I know it was Cody's moment because it was made to be that way. I think it's much more appropriate for Seth Rollins to do it, but that's just me. But when you say it like that, all right, fine. that makes a lot of sense.
There's also something in the story of it that's more effective to have him like, I'm just going to get it taken away from you. And to have Cody be the person to do it and him supporting Cody makes sense, because he was the one, he was Cody's gatekeeper when Cody came back. He was the guy he had to beat, and the guy who did beat him injured in a Hell in a Cell, in like an incredible match. And I think there's that breeds between characters a begrudging respect. And then that grows as if they both are the same sort of character alignment, which they moved into. And so it's like, all right, I'm going to do this to you. I'm the only one. And he was the only one who could have helped him win that match, because every other person who came out got countered. I mean, you know, you have tons of storytelling. I want to go through the sequence and do what I think is debunking what I think is a ridiculous premise that was put out on the internet. Surprise. So you have Jimmy come out to interfere. Jay is the counter to that. Totally makes sense. They take each other out. Solo comes out. We get the exact same thing that happened at WrestleMania 39. This time he's able to kick out, and then out comes John Cena. Why John Cena? Because Solo put him on the shelf. That was the last person to interact with him, was him getting put on the shelf by Solo Sikoa. So he comes out to counter him, also gives Roman a shot because they've had their issues. Then out comes The Rock, his signature feud outside of Randy Orton. His feud within this family has been with The Rock. The Rock takes him out. The Rock's talking, and Mama Rhodes, he's getting ready. Seth comes out in the interim, but Roman takes him out immediately, just by instinct, because he knows who else would know, like, where the attack is coming from and who it's coming from than Roman. And The Rock is sort of taken by surprise. Then people have said this was going to be Brock's spot. Mm. That makes zero sense if you're tracking what's happening here. And I will tell you, why. Yeah. First of all, Brock's last feud was against Cody, not Roman. That feud is long over. And every person who came in during that run had a feud with the person before them. And had some, there was some history there that made sense that they were the person to come counteract them. The Undertaker seems like a very weird choice. That should have more naturally been maybe Stone Cold, because Stone Cold is the Rock. That is the Rock's kryptonite, is Stone Cold.
Right.
However,
right,
he also feuded a lot with the Undertaker, and somebody put out, like, as a joke, like, the Undertaker is a problem with his family, but he has feuded with everybody. Like, every Samoan he's taken out. He took out Yokozuna.
Well, yeah, he's
took
been
out
for a million
Rikishi.
Years, yeah.
Like, he's wrestled every member of that family. So for him to come out and put the nail in the coffin makes sense from that point. He makes more sense to me than Brock would have.
I think it's for a lot of people, it's just that, like, him, it being him isn't satisfying.
Yes.
It's just, you want it to be Stone Cold. Do you think?
Mm-hmm.
I also think the pattern that you established is these are recent feuds.
Yeah.
Solo and John Cena was recent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jimmy and Jay was recent. The Undertaker and The Rock, you have to think about it. It's like, oh, yeah, they did have a lot of
matches. It's a bit of a thinker. Together.
It breaks the pattern a little bit.
It does, but that's because The Rock's last feud was with Cena. And he was the guy who took Cena out.
Yeah.
That was the one 10 years ago. So if you dig back further than that, you have to go to probably the tag match with Mick Foley against Ric Flair and Batista.
Here are the correct calls in order. Ready?
Go for
number
it.
Number one, Stone Cold.
Yes.
Number two, Vin Diesel. Number three, anyone else.
Number Jason four, Statham. The idea of having hair.
Number five, the DC animated universe.
No, sorry,
I fucked it
James
up. The DC
Gunn.
Extended universe.
Yeah.
James Gunn.
Zach Levi comes out.
Yeah. There we go.
Number six, Tafiti.
Wow.
By God, it's the Black Adam box office.
See, my thing
tomatoes,
is...
Yeah. It's Rotten Tomatoes.
As much as I... But y'all are saying it in terms of what makes sense. You're not saying it in terms of what WWE would do and has done in the past. And I think that's what it is. Because, like, there have been plenty of times they've done stuff that don't make no sense. But they just did it. And I think that's why I think more people are like, yeah, you can do the math. But also, there's no guarantee that WWE would have done that math. Because we're still so used to when that was more likely. I think we're still like, they can still fuck it up at any time. We don't want to get too used to this. Like,
But the highlight of the Renaissance era is logical storytelling.
Yeah,
Danielle.
And yeah. Look, and we are so we're not getting too comfy in these chairs because they might get repoed at any second. Okay, like we're not trying to like get, you know, we're all still very much on like, you know, mom's new boyfriend seems really cool. I like that he brings us puzzles, but I'm watching you. So you know what I mean? Like, we're still.
They're also, in this era, they're not forgetting anything. Like, Monday Night Raw was a really good Raw. I don't think it was the Raw people were expecting in terms of huge surprises, everybody returning. You didn't really get as much of that. You got some teases of people. You got Dragunov showing up, having a really fun match. But also, like, little stories that have been going, that have been sort of slow burning. Indy Hartwell loses to Roxanna Perez and Candice LeRae is sitting there going, I told you like that. It's really, that match is really about Candice LeRae and her continued move to the dark side and her basically trying to either figure out whether Indy Hartwell is going to be useless or useful to her. But in terms of paying off Cody Rhodes' story, I don't think you could get any better than what they did. Like, in terms of a satisfying end, I can't think of a main event outside of Daniel Bryan that had as satisfying an end as that.
Yeah, that's going to be the one that I would always compare that to. Like,
and
that
I think
was,
this one was better.
I can't join you there, pal.
That's
fair. Totally fair.
Can't join
it's
you
arguable.
There.
It's arguable. It's my
and I
opinion.
Understand it's my personal biases towards Cody Rhodes. I'm not a fan. But, that's fair. You know, I understand that's what's coming in here, but I can't join you down that street.
That's fair.
Yeah, totally fair. When it comes to this, it isn't exactly the way that I'd fantasy booked it, but it's pretty fucking close because a lot of what I wanted to do with the way that I was fantasy booking it is find a way to bring in all of the other people that have been wronged by the Bloodline or had been wronged by Roman. And so even though it wasn't the lumberjack match I would have liked, it still like really gave me everything out of the way that I would have wanted to see it. So basically I'm saying they did listen to the podcast and they knew they'd have to pay me if they used my great idea. So they tried to find a way to do the bootleg version. And I guess it turned out all right and people liked it.
I admire the restraint in booking, even though it's overbooked in the best possible way, right? But at the end. So the majority of the match is the two of them fighting one another. Like that's the way it should be. You want to feature the two of them.
Yes.
And Roman doing like everything on the way out to get heat, including not using a table, putting a table away because he's in Philadelphia, the home of ECW, and everybody's going to go crazy.
Yep.
By the table coming out. Like, just, I mean, he's so good. And he got respect the night after. He got respect immediately after from fans. And I think it's hard to grasp even now in the midst of it. Like, we need a little, you can experience a presidency and say this was the worst ever or the best ever, but until you're like 5-10 years removed and you've seen the impact that it's had, you can't really fully appreciate it. And I think it's, I say that in the way of as great as it's been, I think it's hard to even calculate or gauge the impact that it will have until we've seen it. I still don't think his story is not over. Now we get to see what happens to him without the title.
Right. And I also think that as much as people were really hoping that Cody won last year, it does not have the same emotional resonance because him fighting Roman last year was not as deeply personal as him winning against Roman this year is.
Yeah.
Correct. I wonder what they do next because, you know, the dog has caught its tail. The people wanted Cody as they expressed with their signs and their hashtags, and they got it. So, you know, what does come next? Who is a worthy contender to face the most popular face in the biggest wrestling company in the world? I think Gunter slides in there very easily.
I do too.
But I want that to be a very long-term story. Yeah. I don't want another Shinsuke Nakamura losing tour, you know? I feel like this has to be a reign that is defined by a series of incredible opposition. Our heroes are very well defined by villains who can match them and even exceed yes. them. It is a challenge upon WWE to find credible contenders that mm-hmm. can take Cody to the limit every single time. This reign does not get the benefit of feuds that just to pass the time.
Nope.
Every single right. one has to be a legitimate threat to Cody in the title, and I wonder if they can pull it off.
I think they can, but time will tell. You're 100% right. Like, you get what you want. Now what? You'll shoot. You finally have the Daisy Air rifle, and you're gonna go shoot your eye out in the back yeah. in the backyard. Break your glasses. Is that what's gonna happen? Or will you well, defeat Black Bart and his gang? We're gonna find out. We asked you in the Nation of Conversation for your thoughts on WrestleMania XL. Steven said, out of all the solid wrestling and entertaining commentary, Samantha Irvin is easily the MVP of the weekend. Yes,
yes.
Her in tears announcing Cody Rhodes as the champion is beautiful. And she's getting a lot of credit, like people like Michael Buffer coming out mm-hmm. and giving her flowers, which she well deserves. And it's mm-hmm. great to see someone who is such a fan of the product
yes.
getting to be mm-hmm. a part of it. An important part of it too. She's a huge part of a lot of different characters. Just ask Chelsea Green. She will tell you.
at long last, we have a true successor to Lillian Garcia.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say even a true successor to Howard Finkel.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Okay. All right.
I think Samantha Irvin brings an emotion to her announcing that Lillian Garcia never did, as talented as Lillian was and as immensely Christian as she is now, or maybe always was.
Or perhaps it was, yes.
I thought she was great. I had no problem with her whatsoever, but I think Samantha Irvin is like a special, like that's someone you hold on to for as long as they want to be there.
She gets it. Like she won, and she brought something. And I think that like one of the hardest things that you can do is not just come in and do a good job, but also give something to people that they didn't know they needed until they saw it. And that's what she did by being able to vary the different deliveries for different wrestlers, which helps so much in setting the tone when they come down. But it still feels like sports. You know, it doesn't feel like she's doing a sketch. It still feels very much like sports. It's those little things. And when you are able to no story and love the product so much that you are able to involve yourself in different ways and make it so that, and again, I think that this is also a testament to the fact that now other people who are also incredibly important, referees, you know, backstage announcers, and you know, the people who are in the ring like Samantha Irvin, like are allowed to have personalities now and not just like stand there and be like a boring Blake Slate. So that's fantastic. I don't think everyone can do it the way she does. I don't think everyone should do it the way that she does. But the fact that you can tell the difference between her and everyone else is always going to set her apart. And she did that for her.
Yeah. Red said, I, for one, welcome our new Triple H overlord. If this is how he'll do things going forward, I might be convinced to start watching wrestling again.
Do it.
Great.
Do it.
Jerry said, it feels good to have an ice cream Christmas that isn't sprinkled with the occasional bite of arsenic and isn't filmed in a way that gives me a tummy ache. Yep. Shout out to the production crew. Ooh. Even the screen not switching over turned into a fun moment. I'm sure everybody, all I can imagine is people at the truck going like, fuck, change the fucking screen. It's not working. I got to restart the computer. But it really looked great. They're really doing fantastic work on all the shows, and it's carrying over to NXT as well. They're trying stuff, and it gives it a different feel and energy, so kudos to them.
Yeah, and some of it's not going to work, but that's the great thing is, like, just I always say, like, try stuff, make mistakes, just don't keep making the same mistakes. I like that they're actually taking risks and trying new things, and it'll settle, and they'll figure out what works. And hopefully they'll continue to keep trying new things and not stay stagnant.
That's right. Ice Cream Christmas comes but once a year, but you can stay connected with us all year long. Visit us at all of our social media accounts. You'll find those in the show notes. When we come back, we've got three things from wrestling we want to share with you. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
Are you tired of being picked on for only wanting to talk about your cat at parties?
Do you feel as though your friends don't understand the depth of love you have for your guinea pig?
look around a room of people, do you wonder if they know sloths only have to eat one leaf a month?
Have you ever dumped someone for saying they're just not an animal person?
Us too.
She's Alexis B. Preston.
She's Ella McLeod.
And we host Comfort Creatures, the show where you can't talk about your pets too much, animal trivia is our love language, and dragons are just as real as dinosaurs.
Tune in to Comfort Creatures every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
What is up, people of the world? Do you have an argument that you keep having with your friends and you just can't seem to settle it? And you're sitting there arguing about whether it's Star Trek or Star Wars, or you can't decide what is the best nut, or can't agree on what is the best cheese?
Stop doing that. Listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal, only on Max Fun.
Your topics asked and answered objectively, definitively, for all time.
So don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Loveland, and I'm joined today by
Danielle Radford
and
Dimitri Pompey.
That's correct. Now it's time to share the joy of wrestling with you. This is the three count.
Watch my three count. One, two.
Dimitri, what would you like to put over?
You know, as a man who still watches AEW regularly, despite the difficulties that Tony Khan sets in front of me, I would love to put over the great Stokely Hathaway, who is just doing incredible work on the mic. He's in the middle of a storyline with Willow and Chris Statlander, and he has found himself being abused by a pair of friends who seemingly wants to keep him around, but mostly as a joke. This happened a little while ago, but he was upset with Willow for reasons that aren't relevant, and he had her flight canceled, so she missed Chris's match in an attempt to drive a wedge between them. When he played dumb, he used this amazing line that only he can deliver, you know, to that level of excellence that makes it work. He accuses Willow of booking her flight on Soul Plane. Which is just the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life, and I couldn't get enough of it.
Oh, that's really funny. Yeah, that dude's always funny. Well done.
Yeah.
You know, there's awesome. Nothing that man can do wrong.
The flight happened. I just couldn't get on it because somebody canceled my trip.
Oh my damn. But you know what? If you're supposed to be, you know, her best friend and you love this business so much, you wouldn't have been hopping on Soul Plane. Maybe if you were to pick a dedicated airline like United or Delta,
yeah,
maybe
you would. I wanted to be in your
board of director. You know who you're talking to?
Shut up.
That's the kind of stuff I come to professional wrestling. That's the kind of stuff I come to professional wrestling for. There we go.
Nice.
Got it.
Yeah. Perfect.
Well done. That's excellent. I love it. Danielle, what do you got?
Speaking of Drew making big mistakes and speaking also of people talking back to the TV like they're live tweeting, Drew tweeted a retweet from a woman who had a reaction to Drew's cash-in. His retweet says, I need to bring this woman into my next fight camp. Unrivaled passion and insight will be vital. And here is a clip of what she was saying while Drew was making the biggest mistake of his life.
What did I say to you? What did I tell you? All you had to do was fucking leave. All you had to do was leave. That's all you had to do. You don't listen. Not even to lose your shit in front of everybody. Because you don't listen.
I would watch a show that's just her and fucking Snoop Dogg watching wrestling and doing commentary over it. Fucking book it.
You know she's already responded to his retweet with another video, right?
Oh, I'll have to go watch that when we're done.
Yeah. She's ready to go to work. It would be the short.
Good. Because you need her, Drew.
Yeah.
There is a great UK show that I believe is called Gogglebox, in which ordinary but pretty funny people react to television shows they're watching. Mm-hmm. I want this woman to be the face of the American Gogglebox because that's the only way it will work.
Yes.
Be a great name for her training dojo. Welcome to the Gogglebox. Step inside. And then
Drew.
Fucking leave. That's all you have to do. Anybody who's listened to this show for a while knows that your old pal Hal is a huge fan of the little things. The little things make big matches mean more. They add flavor. They add depth. And sometimes you don't even realize how great they are if you're not paying close enough attention, because they don't happen directly into a handheld mic. But maybe nobody in the current era of WWE or the last several years does more in terms of little things than Roman Reigns. He always finds stuff. He is always talking. So when you watch his matches, attention must be paid, because you will miss a gem otherwise. Case in point, during the match, the main event of Night 2, he and Cody Rhodes did the time-honored spot of trading finishers and kicking out of them. The first was Roman trying to do the crossroads, and then Cody kicking out, to which Roman said this.
An extremely effective crossroads. Cody lost the match on that.
I just want to shove it in his face.
In case you couldn't hear it, it was him saying, "Of course, that move sucks. It doesn't beat anybody."
As an avowed Cody hater, I've long held that he does not do the best crossroads in his family. Dustin does.
Dustin's so
He doesn't even do the best crossroads in a one-on-one match. As a man who's throwing his ones up till the day he dies, Roman's crossroads was excellent, and it should have won the match.
If anybody's getting a pinfall with one of those, it's Roman Reigns.
But yeah, that would have sucks.
That move
doesn't
sucks.
Beat anybody. God, it's so good.
Oh. I love that. Oh, it's of course I didn't win with your shitty move.
Yeah, just like the, I don't think I've ever heard that in the however many years I've been watching, 40 years I've been watching professional wrestling. Never heard somebody have somebody kick out, like use their finisher on them. They kick out and then go, "That move sucks." But it makes sense. Why wouldn't you? It's the so only... simple. It's like just the next level of thinking. Yeah. And that's what makes his matches so great.
The only other person I would expect to do that now would be like a Kevin Owens. Kevin would be another one I'd be like, yeah, Kevin would do that.
Yes. I feel like Kevin Samoa Joe Romans. Is in that category too. Samoa Joe is smart enough to pull that off. And an MJF also would probably do that.
All of these people you've named are great at the little things. Yes. And the little things are the things that I'm going to miss about this era of the Tribal Chief. Although I know he'll probably bring it back in whatever he does, but the Tribal Chief. 3.5 years of glory.
Yes. Yeah. R.I.P. to a world-class title reign. Well, that does it for this episode of Tights and Fights. This week, your hosts were Danielle Radford, Dimitri Pompei, and of course me, Hal Lublin. Dimitri, tell everybody about, just in case they don't already remember or know how great your evangelist is, tell everybody about it and then where they can follow you, please.
Oh, like folks, if you finish WrestleMania season and you're like, ooh, that was great. Don't get me wrong, but I still need some more. I need more of that WrestleMania level drama in my life. Folks, let me tell you, the Eurovision Song Contest is heading to its end point. We are about a month away from Eurovision beginning. 30 plus nations of Europe have all selected a song to send to Malmö in Sweden to compete and find out which of these songs is the best song in Europe. There is high drama this season because last year it was a pretty close two-horse race. This year it's wide open. Anyone can win Eurovision this year. All the songs are fantastic. This is one of the best Eurovision song selection years of all time, in my very humble opinion. And if you want to know what all these songs are about, if you want to know about all these artists and who we think deserves the top prize, head on over to the Eurovangelist podcast. If you're a newbie to Eurovision, we'll tell you everything you need to know so you can get excited for the grand final in May. If you're an old hand at Eurovision, we're going to start doing some look backs at great, hilarious, and very weird moments in Eurovision history. We are going to have guests. We're going to have contests. We're going to have reviews. We're going to have all sorts of madness about how to show folks just how wonderful 67 years of Eurovision has been. So, there's no better time to join on with Eurovangelist right now. You can follow us on Instagram at Eurovangelist. You can email us at Eurovangelist@MaximumFun.org. And you can listen to the actual show, Eurovangelist, anywhere you get your podcasts, including this podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you can listen to Your Evangelists.
It's that easy.
Gorgeous.
Just that easy. Danielle?
Just find me all the places I am. I'm there. And then if I have, I do have stuff coming up. Cannot announce it yet, but keep on the lookout because I hate when people do that. But I've already shot it, so I know it's going to happen. So I'll just let you know. But if you like me in places doing stuff, that's coming up. Oh, and my episode of I don't know when that's coming, but it's coming. So look out for that as well.
Yay! I can't wait to watch that.
Oh, and also I wrote a bunch of the questions this season, so watch it because I wrote it. Bye.
Awesome. I also have stuff coming up I can't talk about, which because it doesn't exist, but if I will it into existence, then there will be actual things. I've auditioned for things I can't talk about. How about that? Ooh, I've said too much. Follow me at Hal Lublin. Our producer is Throw Up Your Puns, Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long on all the socials, including the special bonus videos we put out on Instagram. Just follow us everywhere. What are you doing that you're not doing that? Don't answer. I can't hear you. We'll be back next week to talk even more. You guessed it. Wrestling.
Here comes the pain. Bow to the masters. This is a podcast. They are podcasters. Max Fun's the network. Tyson Fights is the name.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly
by you.